Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you.
Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Paripraja Kacharya Astota Satasri Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Samstapa Kacharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Paripraja Kacharya Astota Satasri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishna Vrindaki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Premse Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadweep Tham Ki Jai, Jamuna Mai Ki Jai, Ganga Mai Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Samveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Do you want to stand? Do you want that?
And on? Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Five. Yeah. Because we haven't seen each other for so many years, we thought this morning, Giriraj Maharaj and myself, would take a small little walk down memory lane and try to remember together some of the...
Hare Krishna. Can you turn it on?
Turn it off?
Yeah. I need you both to come forward a little. I'm afraid the battery's going to run out of that, so I'm giving you a wired mic here. Yeah. Can you come forward? Because this is all the photo of it. So now you both have wired mics.
Hare Krishna. So if it's all right, we'll try to remember together some of the incredible times we had with Srila Prabhupada and put everyone in the mood of appreciating those times. We must take our minds back now a little bit. Around 1970, I had never met Giriraj before. I was active more on the West Coast and in Europe, and he was on the East Coast most of the time. And during this period, now 1970, Prabhupada had been in this country for about 4 years, and he had, from day one, in all of his disciples here, he had inculcated the extreme, intense desire to spread Krishna consciousness. The devotees had no other activity but to spread Prabhupada's message. We didn't have books a lot. They were just beginning to trickle in, some of Prabhupada's books. We didn't have the knowledge of the Vedic tradition. Only recently had we even begun to wear dhotis and shave our heads and get rid of our dogs. So Prabhupada more or less harnessed our energy to do something. That we could understand. And he more or less left it to us. In some ways, Prabhupada, in the early days in America, he didn't know that much about how we do things here. So he was learning from us how our society works. And he only gave this one command, spread Hare Krishna as fast and hard as you can. And then he guided us, of course, and managed to some extent, but he gave us long leashes to do whatever we felt like we could do to spread Krishna consciousness. And after some time, 3 or 4 years of this, several temples became very strong and the movement was spreading and it became quite well-known and stable. So Srila Prabhupada decided at that time, and we don't know, of course, the depths of his thought, but I think he was always thinking that someday he would bring this movement back to his own country. He used to talk about that. Even in the early times, my country has forgotten Krishna. He said, when we are ready, we will go there and teach them again. So several, I don't know, maybe 20 of us got these notices Srila Prabhupada sent out that he has decided to take some of his disciples to India and that we should all meet him there, one way or the other. In those days, we had no organized financing or anything. Everyone was on their own. However you could get there, you try to get there. I'll be there. So Giriraj came, I think you came to London first, and then Belgium, or you came to Belgium, whatever.
I remember Belgium.
We were able to, Gurudas had a friend who worked for a very small airline in Belgium that had one airplane with two propellers. It was called Bosco Airlines. And their route, they did fly to Bombay, but their route was via Aden and Cairo. They had to refuel. And this was a converted cargo carrier. It had no passenger seats. They had put seats in, temporary seats. We were all so thrilled. We were going to India. We were going to India to meet Srila Prabhupada. He was already there. He was coming around from Los Angeles side. No one had any plan of what was going to happen, any idea what was going to happen. No one knew anything about India. Prabhupada was the first Indian man I'd ever seen in my life. There were no Indian immigrants here. India was a far-off place of magic and color. But we knew nothing really about India, except that Srila Prabhupada was from India. And his knowledge was changing our lives radically. And whatever he said, we would do it without any question. So the excitement began to build. We were free from our bonds here in America, the things that were attaching us to there, or Europe, the thing, our temple responsibilities and so on. We were flying off into the wind with Srila Prabhupada. I can remember flying through those Alps and looking out the little windows and seeing the mountains higher than the airplane. It was just skimming over the clouds. We stopped at Aden. It was so hot. We got off the plane. It was like 110 degrees. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And there was one palm tree We had to wait many hours while they refueled this plane by hauling barrels of fuel out to the plane and manually filling it. And there was one palm tree, and it cast a long shadow, so we were all kind of in a row behind this palm tree. And then the next stop was Cairo, and as we flew over the airport, we saw these three exploded jumbo jets on the tarmac. We saw, of course, our eyes were fixed more or less on the pyramids, but there were these three giant wrecks that the terrorists had blown up the week before on the tarmac. And when we got out of the plane to rest while they refueled, the men guarded us with machine guns. So we got to India, we got to Bombay, and everything was overwhelming. And Prabhupada's role with us, his relationship with us, was very different all of a sudden. Now, Srila Prabhupada was the commander-in-chief. He guided everything we did in India from day one. We had no clue what was going on. We saw all this wonderful color and activity, and we kept looking around the streets of Bombay to see pictures of Krishna or temples to Krishna, and there were none. Where's Krishna? This huge city. There was no visible evidence that all of this philosophy and wonderful culture that Prabhupada had been teaching us was here. Only noise, sound, and color. So Prabhupada took charge immediately and began to guide us. And he gave us the same message. Now we have to plant Krishna consciousness back to India and revive it here. So this was the first time that Giriraj, myself, and many other devotees had all been together in a common effort. Srila Prabhupada immediately began to divide us into active groups, and he began to travel quickly from place to place. He went all two or three day trips, not long trips, but a few days here, a few days there, maintaining a base in Bombay, shifting bases from one house to another, constantly moving. It was a wonderful, wonderful period of seeing Srila Prabhupada in action as the commander-in-chief, rather than us taking the action that we did in America. Do you remember? What was your impressions of those days?
Well, like you, I saw India as very remote and exotic. Once in a while I'd see an Indian lady in a sari or an Indian gentleman with a turban on the campus of the University of Chicago just driving by. I don't think I'd ever really met one until the Boston Temple, and one couple started to come, and he had a thick accent, and but he came regularly. They came regularly. Later, I found out that his wife took initiation, and I guess he didn't follow her, and she married our godbrother Tosan Krishna Prabhu. The only knowledge I have, if you want to call it knowledge, is we saw a documentary about India in junior high school or something, and all I remembered was seeing cows in the street, like really crowded streets and cows, and it was sort of like, they worship the cow, they have cows in the streets. And then when we arrived in Bombay, I was excited. I was enlivened. I did see cows in the street, but I was happy. I thought they are, they're worshiping the cow as they should, and protecting the cow. It seemed like a long way from the airport in Santa Cruz to downtown Bombay to Sexaria House. But it was exciting. And there were several cars that came to receive us at the airport. Kailash Seksaria had a letter that he was supposed to receive us there. They were all ambassador cars, all the same. But that was okay. I mean, we wore the same dress every day. We just, you know, maybe some was a little saffron and some was white, but
yellow.
So that was okay.
Yellow dirt.
There were just two models of cars, the ambassadors and the Fiat, so it was good, simple. You didn't have to choose between too many models. Then do you want to take up from when we arrived at Seksaria Bhavan?
Well, my memories really start when Prabhupada arrived at Seksaria.
Okay, I can continue until then. So Seksaria Bhavan was a big mansion just overlooking the Arabian Sea. And I was very impressed that the building was named after our host. And there were five stories, and they gave Srila Prabhupada quarters on the ground floor. The whole ground floor, or what we would call the first floor here, was a guest house, you know. And also on the ground floor, there was a couple of large rooms where the men just lay down on the floor, and there was like a big common bathroom. And then there was one room where, as I recall, Guru Das and Jamuna stayed. And then Mr. Seksaria himself lived on the third floor. And there was an elevator to take you to the third floor. But since I had joined, I hadn't taken an elevator. I didn't know if we were allowed to. And somehow within myself, I thought it was Maya. I thought it was sort of like too easy, too comfortable. So the other devotees would take the elevator, but I would always take the stairs for a while. And then, every day, like every meal was a banquet. And in the Boston temple where I came from especially, it was very austere, Satsrupa Maharaj Adhikari at the time was the temple president, and it was like, two slices of apple, between four and seven chickpeas, and whatever, about three round slices of bananas and a little cereal, so it was like very austere, and then lunch was rice, dal, one vegetable, and chapatis. And after about a year and a half, Srila Prabhupada said, a little sweet at the end of the meal is nice. And I thought, I got worried, like, we might get into sense gratification. So I came from that background. And then, every day, a huge spread, and almonds, cashews, pistachios,
mango milk,
all sorts of fruits, and the lunch. There'd be so many types of vegetables, all cooked in ghee and dal, rice, chapatis, and then sweets. Every meal there'd be so many sweets. Burfi, pada. Anyway, so I was in a lot of anxiety. And I would just basically pick the items that we used to eat in Boston, and no cashews, no almonds, no pistachios, no sweets. And I sort of tried to hold on to that. And I did for a while, but I was in anxiety. But I saw the older devotees. I knew not only were they more senior than me in years, but I could see they were like, they were more mature in Krishna consciousness. I mean, my first impression when we landed in Belgium, because Shamsundar and Malachi and Gurudas and Yamuna, they had come from England. They were there before we arrived. So when I don't know, somehow they brought us to this apartment where they were all staying, and as soon as I walked in, I felt like a complete change in the atmosphere, and they were so Prabhupada conscious. I mean, all they did was talk about Srila Prabhupada. It was, you know, I felt a very powerful spiritual atmosphere in that little apartment in Brussels or Antwerp. So I knew that, you know, these are very mature devotees. They're very special devotees. But at the same time, I couldn't take the lift. I couldn't eat nuts and sweets at first.
You can see how Srila Prabhupada pulled all these diverse personalities from diverse backgrounds with diverse understandings of Krishna consciousness, mm-hmm. and threw us all together in the same room. I mean, I'd never slept in a room with 20 men in it before. I mean, not since for many years, not in Krishna consciousness, and united us in one goal: spread Krishna consciousness. That was it. We were there for that. We were his army, and we balanced each other out. And we didn't know each other. We'd never met before. I only knew 3 or 4 out of the 20, maybe. But, you know, Giriraj, with his quiet, calm, thinking manner, balanced out my crazy energy, perhaps. You know, I wanted to dash off and do this and that, but then Giriraj would say, well, what if... I always used to think, how can this man speak so slowly? Man, he was just a boy. Thin, very thin. I think he looks good now with a little weight. But then Prabhupada, boy, when he came to the Shiksharya house, he was like the king had arrived. And we began to feel that whole Indian thing with the reverence for the master and the opulences that he was able to command at his fingertips. And he began arranging us, breaking into the scene in Bombay, arranging programs. The first one I recall was the big program we had on the beach at Chaupati Beach. It was a general, not interfaith, but it was all kinds of Hindu yogis speaking their bits. It was a conference, I think it was, or seminar or something, of maybe 10 yogis, something like that, 10 sadhus. And almost as an afterthought, we were invited. And Prabhupada went up and sat on the dais with all the other yogis, and then we all started piling up too. And the host or the moderator of this thing came running over and says, no, you can't have all these people up there. Prabhupada says, if they do not sit with me, I do not sit there. So they allowed us all on the stage with him, and we just took the whole show over, you know. We started chanting Hare Krishna and dancing. We began to get the feeling then, oh, yeah, okay, Prabhupada wants to exhibit us. That's what he's doing. We were always trying to figure out what Prabhupada was trying to do. And we danced and chanted, and pretty soon the whole beach started chanting and dancing. And all these yogis who had gone on a long-winded, it was a several-day conference, they'd talk for days about the, you know, Mayavadi stuff, and the merging with the void and this and that. The culminating experience was dancing Hare Krishna for about an hour. Everybody just loved it. That was our first kind of hit in Bombay, and there was beginning to be some newspaper coverage and things like that. Kalbadevi Temple, we used to go down there. They began to kind of adopt us. This was something, you have to realize the times. I mean, this was something so unique for Indian people to see. They had, you know, these great yogis had gone out into the world like Yogananda and people like that. Can't even remember all their names. But and at most, they had maybe made one or two foreign disciples. And they were resting on those laurels. And maybe they even brought one or two foreigners back with them to India. I don't know. But suddenly, one of their own people brings back 20 people, 20 Westerners who are completely Vaishnava-looking, acting, full of enthusiasm. They only think about Krishna. This was startling for the people of Bombay. And to spread that quicker, Prabhupada started accepting every invitation that came our way. Whatever people said from Gorakhpur, or Indore, or Surat, or wherever it was, cities where they lived, oh, you please come to my city. Prabhupada would be on the next train with a bunch of devotees. He always left a key group behind, because he said from the beginning, Bombay should be our... Well, it was undecided. Bombay, Calcutta, or Delhi. But pretty much Prabhupada saw the kind of opulences and the facilities available in Bombay for spreading Krishna consciousness and began to target Bombay as the center, at least initially. So one by one, these cities fell to Prabhupada's magic. And we began to feel on a different level our connection with Krishna. We could see it in a historical, in a traditional way now, rather than just loving Prabhupada and loving what he came from. Now we were becoming part of that same culture. We could see it. There wasn't much evidence of Krishna in Bombay. There were no Krishna temples and things set up. But Prabhupada didn't grab us and take us to Vrindavan or Mayapur, any of those places yet. He wanted us to spread Krishna consciousness in our Western way, right there in the heart of the commercial activity of Bombay. And we met some characters. Another important aspect to that whole period was the fun we had. This was the most fun I think I'd ever had in my life. And we were always joking. And because we were so diverse, but so united with Prabhupada, we could see the humor in each other's personalities. And we began to have these long-running jokes about the people we met and became friends with in the major personalities in Bombay or minor personalities. Whoever they were, they became kind of part of our amusement. The whole thing was so painless because it was so much fun. We didn't have anything. We had no, really, he talks about these vast banquets and everything, but those came and went, and then the next day we would eat a few chickpeas. But we had so much fun. The fun that we had and hooked us deeper and deeper into Prabhupada's tender net. We could see the joy that he was experiencing, too, while he did all this. We would go to some meeting or something, and he'd be all grave and stern and chastising his countrymen for allowing Krishna consciousness to drop and all this. And then we'd get back to the place, and a few of us would be sitting around with Prabhupada, and he'd bring up something that happened there, and we'd all start laughing, and Prabhupada would start making jokes about it. He was so detached from the whole thing. It seemed like Krishna was writing the script. Well, he always did with Prabhupada. With Prabhupada, there was never a moment when you could guess what was going to happen. You could never predict a moment in advance what Prabhupada was going to do or say, ever. He was a constant surprise. Constant surprise. Even after years of being closely associated with Srila Prabhupada, even as his secretary, every time my hand went for that door to his room, it trembled with anticipation. You know, there's kind of this feeling of, boy, I hope I'm ready for this, even after years of that. Because whatever happened inside that door in the next 5 minutes or 5 hours, you didn't know, was going to be wonderful. But can I handle this? This is really... That feeling. Never have before or since had that wonderful feeling of surprise that Prabhupada always brought to to his magic world. And this was totally unorganized, all of this. Totally. Prabhupada was leaving it all to Krishna's hands. He had risked everything. He had risked everything to come to us. Now he was feeling the fruits of his Krishna's gifts to him. And we were his dancing white elephants. They even said that in the newspaper. He has brought his dancing white elephants. In an interview, Prabhupada told them that. He gave us the name, the dancing white elephants. I have brought my dancing white elephants. So they put it in the newspaper. you carry on. I could go on from there.
Well, I'd only met Srila Prabhupada twice in Boston. But meeting him in India was a different experience. And he was in Calcutta, and he was coming from there to meet us in Bombay. And we kept getting telegrams saying when he was coming, but then we would get another telegram saying he was coming later. And Tamal Krishna Goswami, I mean, once he passed through Boston, but I never really got to meet him before. And he was saying how he was anticipating Srila Prabhupada's arrival. And he said it was like a comet in the sky, like just coming closer and closer, and then like it was going to hit. And I remember the one time Devanand, who was a Hindi film star, came to meet Srila Prabhupada at Six Area Bhavan. So you're like quite excited. And then like 2 days later, there was a picture in a film magazine or else a general magazine with news about prominent people showing Devanand sitting with Srila Prabhupada. Mm. So we thought, like we've only been here a week or 10 days. But in America, we were just used to doing, Harinam Sankirtan and distributing books. But in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada said that we can't do Harinam Sankirtan like that because people will think we're beggars. In India, some people go in the streets with cartels and they chant and want to get some money. But initially we did. Kailash Seksaria would arrange a different part of the town and we'd go out, like I remember especially Princess Street and Kulvadevi, like the old section, and have all these like laborers pulling these carts loaded down with these big sacks of grains and spices or whatever, and just wearing these little gumshas and struggling, it looked like they were struggling. And then India wasn't very opulent in one sense. Where we were staying was like practically the best locale in Bombay, Marine Drive, just along the sea. But later, one of our godbrothers named Tulsidas came to visit. That was after. That was at the time of the second Bombay Pandal. That was in 73. But anyway, so we sort of took him downtown and Marine Drive, that's like, the Golden Mile or something. And he was looking at it and he said, when do the slums end? Because from the outside, they sort of look like old tenement buildings, a little dilapidated. But that also has to do with the tax structure, that the rich people didn't want to show their wealth because they were hiding most of it, and they didn't want to like pay too much tax, so they kept the outside looking pretty old and dilapidated, but inside, you know, gold, diamonds, marble, it was like very opulent. So we'd go out on Harinam, and Kailash Saxaria would like arrange for a little entourage to follow us with Nimbupani, you know, with silver pitchers and silver platters and silver goblets. And I felt so embarrassed, you know. We're in front of like all these like poor people on the streets of old Bombay, and we're being followed. You know, we come in these cars. In those days, only the richest people had cars, and then this entourage of servants with Nimbupani and Kesari. I felt very embarrassed, but and then the preaching.
And Prabhupada was always waiting for the report.
Yeah.
Every day, the leaders, the men, had to give the report to what happened that day to Srila Prabhupada. This was the most wonderful time of day to deliver your report to Srila Prabhupada at the end of the day. We would all go in his room, and he would see what we did. We would tell him what happened, and he would give advice and make plans about the next day, the next week. There weren't many long-term plans other than just spreading Krishna consciousness as fast as we could. This was we were seeing Prabhupada in a new, different, and wonderful dimension that he just kept unfolding like the commanding chief. This was a wonderful experience to be part of an army that Prabhupada was putting together, as opposed to before, we were kind of all on our own individual efforts to spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada guiding us through letters, occasional phone calls or telegrams, but this was the real thing. This was sitting with the commander in chief every day. Let's see, from Bombay, where did you go from Bombay? You stayed in Bombay.
Srila Prabhupada had a friend. He'd actually stayed at Prem Kutir before he came to America. And his friend, who managed Prem Kutir, Hari Krishna Das Agarwal, and I thought that was wonderful. His name was Hari Krishna Das, my God. And so Hari Krishna Das Agarwal, he arranged for us to go to the Vedanta Sammelan in Amritsar. But I think you stayed behind.
Yeah.
And then from there we went, well, yes, Prabhupada dropped some of us off in Delhi. We began in Delhi. And then in December, Prabhupada was invited to the Gita Jayanti in Indore. So we met him in Indore. From Indore, we went to Surat. And in Surat, Rishi Kumar Prabhu, who was the only person I had known before, he sort of pulled me over and spoke this very confidential information that Srila Prabhupada wanted to start a new program called Life Membership. And anyone who did Life Membership would please Srila Prabhupada very much. So he was sort of suggesting, like, why don't you and I go to Bombay and we can meet up with Shamsundar and we can do Life Membership. So that sounded very intriguing. Of course, you know, on the other hand, I didn't want to leave Srila Prabhupada, and I also had become very attached to Gurudas and Yamuna, but I thought, yes, we should do that. So he came to Bombay, and at that time, Shamsundar Prabhu was living in the Seapot Palace Hotel upstairs. They gave us, like, one large room that the men stayed in. There weren't that many of us, and then I think there was another one or two rooms for the householders. And the hotel was owned by Ramchand Chabri. I thought that was good. You know, Ramchand is, and it was a vegetarian hotel, and he somehow had known Srila Prabhupada and the devotees from England. Yeah, from London, and he extended the facility to us. So, should I continue, or do you want to take over? So, earlier, oh yeah, this is also very interesting. Earlier, when Gurudas, Yamuna, and Gopal, and Bhakta Bruce, who later became Banu, and is now Banu Swami, and I were in Delhi, once when I was walking down the street, I don't know how it happened, but I just noticed the vendors, they would like have newspapers and magazines on the sidewalk, and so I don't know why, I just picked one up, and right on the back page was a huge report about Srila Prabhupada's program at on the top of Scindia House in Ballard Estate, which was like the most prestigious part of the business section, and how, you know, Prabhupada had gone to America like penniless, getting a free passage on Scindia's steamship, and then he had come back like the triumphant hero with American disciples, and you know, there's this whole report. I was like really impressed. It was like practically the whole back page. So then when I arrived in Bombay, Shamsundar Prabhu or someone had gotten the list of invitees to that program at Scindia House, because Sumati Maharaji had invited all the elite of Bombay. I don't know if it was in the report I read, or one of the devotees told me, but they were like demigods, you know, on the terrace of this big office building, and then like looking down on the streets at the ordinary people, and it was so Shamsundar Prabhu, one morning he wrote out a name and address on a piece of paper, S.N. Nagpal. And he said, you know, I want you to go to this man and make him a life member. So I went, and he also, you know, he was like up on something assurance building right at Churchgate, near Churchgate Station. And he had a petrochemical refinery. And so I was nervous, but I had faith in Prabhupada, and Krishna was there, and I went into his office and sort of made the presentation, told him about our activities. I think we had some pictures that we showed them. We had a few books, showed him the books, explained the benefits, and asked him to become a life member. So he seemed nice enough, you know, he listened. And he said, well, you know, I'm not alone in the business. I'll have to speak to my brother, and then I'll let you know. That seemed reasonable enough, so I came back. And Shamsundar Prabhu asked, so what happened? So I told him. He said, oh, that's just an excuse. I would have made him a life member. And, you know, you then he actually gave some very profound advice. He said that he has plenty of money. He could have afforded to become a life member. He didn't need to ask his brother. But he had some doubt in his mind. And you have to be intelligent enough to understand what their doubts are, even without them expressing them. And you have to be able to address their concerns, you know, remove their doubts, even without them expressing them, and then they'll become a life member. So I thought that was very good advice. I thought, whew, he's like really on a high level. He can know what they're thinking without them even saying it. But I must say, 3 or 5 days later, Mr. Nagpal phoned back and said, I spoke to my brother and will become your life member. But what I think may have happened, this I found out much later. He lived in the next, his residence was in the next apartment building from Mr. Chabria's residence. So I don't know, maybe he checked up on us or something, I don't know. But anyway, he did become a life member. He was the first life member I made.
Giriraj at this at that time was just a young boy, really. How old were you, 19, 20?
22, but maybe 22. I looked younger. Oh, no, I wasn't 22. Yeah, I was.
22. Very cautious and deep thinking. It was amazing to watch the transition of pushing Giriraj, giving him, making him do certain things that he had to do for Prabhupada. Forced this a new spirit out of you.
Maybe I'll mention that just briefly. I was always afraid to go out because I just wanted to stay back and chant. I was afraid that, like, if I went out, I would get into Maya. Not get into Maya, but I would get attracted. Not even attracted, diverted. Like, even in Boston, if I had to go to the store, if they wanted to send me to the store, I wouldn't go out alone. Because I thought if I went out, my eyes might go to a billboard or something. And that would be a fall down, because we're only supposed to think of Krishna, nothing else. And I didn't want to be tempted to look at a billboard or anything. So, and Bombay, like you said, all the colors and textures and smells and exoticness. So, my inclination was to, like, stay back and chant and sort of do service from behind the lines, if you will. And, you know, Shamsundar Prabhu sort of nudged me out the door. And I don't know I remember this man's name was Vakarya. He had a textile shop on Old Hanuman Lane. I know that was a good name. Wow, Old Hanuman Lane. And I was very nervous, and I think I was probably taking an auto rickshaw, and I was sitting in the back chanting, you know, like for dear life. I was chanting for dear life, and I was really relishing the chanting, and I had a realization that you can be Krishna conscious outside as well, but at the same time, there's the added benefit of spreading the movement. So it just clicked, you know, this is it. You go outside, you chant, you be Krishna conscious outside, and at the same time you spread Krishna consciousness. And you do both at the same time. And that was a turning point in my spiritual life.
Prabhupada forced us against our personalities and our normal desires for privacy and for hesitation. He forced us to the front lines. We would be sitting in some meeting like this. I'm not at all comfortable speaking in public. And he would say, and there might be 5,000 people out there, he would suddenly turn, without any preparation, he would suddenly turn, Shamsundar, you will say something? God. He forced us like this. My desire to... I was reading the whole picture from... My perspective was that Prabhupada wanted centers in Bombay, Delhi, and Calcutta. We could see that. And I loved Bombay. I mean, when I first saw that place, I thought, wow, what a city. You know, it's close to Los Angeles. I mean, equivalent to L.A. type of city. It's full of opulence and color and sunshine. It was the movie industry, and everything was there that I liked. And I'd heard stories about Delhi. Calcutta, oh my God, people told me about Calcutta. So, and I knew that he wanted myself and Gurdas to take over management of one of these places. So I voluntarily stayed in Bombay to build up a kind of a power base so that when the time came to assign us different posts, we knew that was coming, that Prabhupada would say, hey, you stay and be head up things in Bombay. I was hoping for that. I had to stay back, even though he went traveling to all these wonderful places. I could have gone to Amritsar, I could have gone to Indore, all those places. But Prabhupada, I stayed behind and made life members and built whatever I could do there. And it came to pass that way, because on your way back from Amritsar, the train they were on stopped in Delhi. And Prabhupada said to Gurdas and Jamuni, he says, you will get down here and start the center in Delhi. I was so happy. I mean, I shouldn't say this, maybe. Then I knew, I get to stay in Bombay. But the key to Bombay was Prabhupada's program was life members. He was so clever. And if you read back in the books, Lilamrita, you can understand Prabhupada's business life had carried him around to all these cities previously in his middle years. He had done business in Bombay before, and he'd done business in other cities, but he really liked Bombay. He had, although his business was not, I don't know the story, but it wasn't permanent there. He always had an idea that Bombay should be the financial center for his spreading of Krishna in India. And this was a new idea. I mean, looking back 30 years later, you go to India and you see Krishna's name everywhere. You know, Krishna bicycle shop, Krishna this, Gopal that. But in those days, you never saw Krishna's name anywhere. Prabhupada has single-handedly, in our lifetimes, switched the whole consciousness of that billion-person nation. It's very subtle, but he did it. There was no, except for little pockets like perhaps in Vrindavan, or there were a few devotees in each little town of Krishna, but not many. Krishna was not a popular god. It was all Shiva and Ganapati and other demigods, and all hollow. You know, the temples were unpeopled. Whatever temples were there, they were just old ancient artifacts that people came to look at. And Prabhupada pushed the spirit of Krishna back in and blew fanned the flames to an extent that it's very subtle, but it magnified it hundreds and thousands of fold. Now you see how Krishna is very popular in India. Anything to do with Krishna is popular in India. If anyone has been there, you can see that. Krishna's name is everywhere. Rama and Sita also, but Krishna to them to an extent that it was never there when we were first there. This is Prabhupada's potency. There's so many stories of Prabhupada's potency. How he changed the minds of people just with a small sentence, or a small event. We saw it happen. We began to be invited from one man's house to another. We gave programs almost every night. It was a grueling schedule for a 70-some-year-old man. What to speak of, I mean, for us even, what to speak of a 70-year-old man. We were in our 20s, and we were always exhausted. Prabhupada never seemed to flag. Someone would say, oh, we have a program tonight at so-and-so's house. And we had just finished digesting the program, the food from the program that midday. Oh, okay. So off we'd go again. We didn't have books to distribute. We didn't have personal knowledge much of the scriptures. We had a basic grasp of the philosophy. So when we spoke, it was always very simple. I'm not this body. Pure spirit soul. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. That was a new idea in India. Yeah. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. They didn't even know that. This had been forgotten. And it was so simple to prove it to them. Well, who do you think spoke Bhagavad Gita? That takes a person to speak Bhagavad Gita, right? You're all following Bhagavad Gita. Yes. Well, who's the person who's speaking Bhagavad Gita? Well, that's Krishna. Oh, then he is a person, right? Yes. No, I don't like that. Gradually, the whole idea of Krishna as a person, as a personality, became implanted in India. Re-implanted, perhaps. But Prabhupada's energy and his vitality just seemed to get stronger and stronger and stronger with each day there. And he was constantly talking to people who would come. We never saw him sleep. He would only take little food. He would encourage us to eat huge amounts. But he only took a little food. These great characters in Krishna consciousness now that we know, we're just budding young people, and we all kind of grew up together in a family with Prabhupada as our father. And there, of course, there were down periods when we all felt, you know, this is too hard for us to do this. Oh, I just would like to go home, you know, go back where there's a dishwashing machine or some hot water on command, you know. But the up of being with Prabhupada just made everything easy, so light. Was that your feeling? I don't remember.
Yeah. I'll just add one note. I don't know how much time we have, but just one big man who started to come to see Srila Prabhupada, I think he was the first that really showed interest consistently, was Sadaji Whitlow. And he was big physically. He was a big Punjabi man. He'd always wear like a nice white dhoti and kurta with little jeweled studs. And he had a chain of about 14 sweet shops in Bombay. So Prabhupada gave him the nickname, the Sweet Ball King. And he was a big man. He was more of a Hindu than a Vaishnav, but he could see that Prabhupada was spreading Hinduism like no one else ever before. And he really wanted to support Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON. And whenever he would come, we'd all like get excited because he's so big and imposing. And on the life membership and the schedule, we were getting so many invitations. Srila Prabhupada said, okay, we're not going to anyone's house unless they become a life member. So there's one man, he got a little annoyed, K.J. Somaya. He was a very big man. He got a little annoyed. It turned out he was a miser. But he did become a life member. But and then Prabhupada joked. So he said, we won't accept any invitations unless they become life members. And then he quipped that we're making life members simply by eating. So one of the big programs that I remembered the best, it was a midday program, was actually at Ramcham Chabria's house. And he invited a lot of big people, including Sadaji Whitlow. And Sadaji Whitlow was such a, in a very nice way, like a Hindu chauvinist. And somehow he got me in a corner and we were sitting, and he just went on about the superiority of Indian culture. And the whole focus of the discussion was sweets. He said, you know, what do you have in America? Chocolate and cake. That's it. And we, you know, just from milk and sugar, you know, rasgulla, sandesh, gulab jamun, pera, and he just went on and on. And then with grains, halva, and he was, you know, just on that point, he was like completely smashing the Western civilization, establishing the superiority of Indian culture. So it was another one of those wonderful feasts. Everything was so well prepared, and it was that one was relatively light, but so well prepared. Everything was just so expert, and the Indian hospitality then was wonderful. You know, they would. It was very common that after the meal they would invite us to take rest. You know, they'd make all the bedrooms available and everything. And sometimes Prabhupada would also take a little rest. Of course, he'd have his own room, and we'd go into some other room and talk about Prabhupada and, you know, lie down, take, you know, rest a little. I don't think we could sleep. I couldn't sleep very much. But on this occasion, it was such a good feast, and they were so hospitable. The devotees really were taking good rest. And Prabhupada stayed awake with a secretary, and then later Prabhupada told the hosts, I think we have to wake them up now, because if we let them sleep too much, by the time they get up, they'll be hungry again. I have to feed them all over again.
One aspect I recall from those days is that we were Americans, and many of the devotees who came were from New York and from the East Coast, which was a real intense modern lifestyle. And here was poor India that had never seen even Western advertising, what to speak of a bunch of pushy Western salesmen. And actually, we were just selling life memberships. And some of the pranks we pulled to advertise Krishna's name around Bombay and to impress life members were really hilarious. I mean, we would go into the, we were not afraid to go into the biggest, because they all seemed so small and quaint to us after New York and L.A. and all that. These so-called big businessmen may have millions of dollars, but they lived like real simple kind of 19th century lives. So we would come to Tata's front, talk to the biggest businessman in India, or Birla, or somebody like that, and just storm into his office, three or four guys from New York, Rishi Kumar and Tamal Krishna and some of these guys. And the secretaries would all go like this, no, boom, 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 door after door. We go right to the guy's desk, throw the papers down on his desk and say, you're becoming a life member. Okay, just to get rid of us. And you will make 10 of your friends life members. But taught us to be fearless, because he was fearless. He was like that. He said everything straight out to his countrymen. He says, you're all fallen down. You've forgotten everything. You're copying these Westerners. He said, you have a few cars. They have millions. You'll never have as many cars as they have. You'll never have as much opulence as they will. You have your own opulence, and that's your spiritual knowledge, and you've thrown it in the garbage heap. What's wrong with you people? Like that, he just gave it to him straight across. Every one of those meetings where he said that, it was just silence afterwards. But people knew that he was right. But Prabhupada was so fearless, that same fearlessness went spreading through us. It even got Giriraj, who was one of the quietest, most meditative devotees in the whole lot, storming the streets of Bombay, making life members. When it came time in 1971, early 71, we had been in Bombay, what, not even a year.
Yeah, we arrived, I think, in October of 70.
We thought, well, Prabhupada really likes big things. We knew, we had gradually learned a little bit about what really pleased Srila Prabhupada. I mean, many things, of course, pleased Prabhupada. But what he liked the most was big events. In the West or in India, anywhere. He liked Krishna's name to be out there in prominent lights with big displays. So we had this idea to put on a big festival in the center of Bombay, this Cross Maidan grounds. And there were only, what, five or six of us, and that was it. We were the only devotees in Bombay, and we had this huge agenda. Finally, we signed up, so we had to do it. We signed up the grounds, so we had to. Wow, this could get out of our hands. But I don't think there was ever a moment when we didn't think it could be done, because Prabhupada had taught us that if you take this kind of risk for Krishna, that if you push out and try to do more than you can possibly imagine, that Krishna personally has to come and help you. This is what we wanted. We wanted to see Krishna. So Prabhupada was the example for that. He came, he risked all to come to America and did what he did. So we took up that spirit. And he obviously had seen Krishna by doing that. And we saw Krishna remove all the obstacles from his path, historically. And then we saw them day to day, how these obstacles would fall away as Prabhupada charged forward. So we didn't have any qualms about, okay, we'll put on this festival. It's costing, I think we spent, 2 lakhs or something? 200,000 rupees was our... It went over budget about twice, probably, but in those days that was a huge
sum. That was a huge amount of money.
Huge sum of money. There was something like 7 rupees to the dollar.
Yeah.
Where are we going to, 6 penniless men and women, going to get a hold of that kind of money? So Giriraj almost single-handedly went out on the streets, hit the streets, and got the money for this whole festival. Tamal Krishna arranged the pandal and the kind of the physical aspects of the thing. I did the advertising. And somehow or other, it all came together in March 1971. And it was the most biggest festival in ISKCON history to that point. And maybe since, too. I don't know. But suddenly, every day, at a time, there were 10,000 people hearing the Maha Mantra and realizing what Prabhupada had done in the world. And Prabhupada loved that festival. I mean, afterwards, that's all he could talk about. Said, yes, this is the way, this is the way. So that began a whole series of pandal programs then in Delhi and Calcutta and other places. But Prabhupada, he planted that idea in our heads to do the biggest things we could possibly imagine without considering the consequences too much, because Krishna will personally come and help. And we saw it ourselves time after time. I mean, God, the permits alone to get all this stuff together. I think Rishi Kumar did the permits, didn't he?
Yeah, Gurudas. I know to some extent he was involved in public relations in that sense.
Yeah. But somebody who wouldn't, you couldn't imagine signing a permit would suddenly get the inspiration to sign the permit. Only Krishna could have made that happen.
Yeah.
And we made a spectacle like they had never seen, because they hadn't seen yet the Western advertising techniques. So we plastered the whole city of Bombay with giant hoardings, billboards that just said, Hare Krishna, or Prabhupada is coming, like that. Real flashy colors right on the main intersections all over Bombay. And we got a big balloon and had it flying on a string 100 feet or so above the... It was the first time ever done in India. Above the grounds with Hare Krishna written on it and flashing lights at night. You could see it all over Bombay. They never saw anything like this. And we strategically located it between 2 train stations, because in those days most Bombayites went by train everywhere.
Yeah.
So they had to go by the grounds just to get their train. The impact was enormous. Prabhupada was so pleased. And our pleasure was his pleasure. If my only desire and your only desire and everyone's only desire in those times was to see Prabhupada happy. That was our life. If Prabhupada was pleased, what more is there? Yeah.
Prabhupada's pleasure lit up the world.
So then we got separated at some point. You went on to... You stayed in Bombay? No, you went...
Oh, yeah. Well, then... But I thought what you just said was perfect conclusion. I don't know.
Okay.
I have to go in. Oh, you have to go in.
That's right.
But I mean, that was so moving what you just said. Okay. Do you want to continue or
no?
Okay. I'll just, because you gave the introduction, I'll give the epilogue.
Okay.
After the great success of the Bombay Pandal, Srila Prabhupada wanted to repeat the program in Calcutta. And because Shamsundar Prabhu was the temple president in Bombay and he was like in charge of the whole activities there, Srila Prabhupada sent Tamal Krishna Goswami and me to Calcutta. And in Calcutta one evening, Tamal Krishna Goswami spoke to me on the veranda of the same temple, 3 Albert Road. And he started to like confide in me. And like, Guru Das and Jamuna, you know, did speak to me a lot in a sort of family way, but he spoke in a very sort of confidential way about Srila Prabhupada and his relationship with him and other devotees. And he said that Srila Prabhupada had a few disciples that were like confidential devotees. And I didn't know that. You know, to me, they were all senior. Compared to me, they were all senior, and Prabhupada loved them all. I didn't know they were and he mentioned himself, and I thought, wow, you're one of them. No, I was really impressed. I was genuinely impressed. And then he started to glorify Shamsundar Prabhu. And he said, you know, Shamsundar Prabhu is one of the biggest preachers in the movement. And I was surprised when Tamal said that, because I hadn't heard Shamsundar Prabhu give class much. I don't even know if I heard him give one class. So I said, what do you mean? I don't think I've even heard him give one class. And Tamal said, preaching doesn't just mean speaking about Krishna. Preaching really means engaging people in Krishna's service. And by these huge programs that Shamsundar Prabhu has done, and he mentioned the Cross Maidan Pandal and the Life Membership Program. You know, Shamsundar has engaged so many people in Krishna's service. He's made such a tremendous impact. So he is one of the biggest preachers in the whole movement. That was what Tamal Krishna Goswami said. And I accept that even now. And then the other thing he said was that the secret, it was like his realization, you know, the secret of advancement in spiritual life is service to the spiritual master. And that also struck me because, you know, at the time I was so new, you know, I'd read about like chanting, studying Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and worshiping the deities, and I'd heard about all the, and doing service, you know, working, doing service. But they were all like the same. There was no hierarchy. And then when he said that, like, you know, service to the spiritual master, you know, that struck. Somehow that went into my heart. And then that became the focal point, as it was for you already. And I would chant. But it was so I could serve Prabhupada better. You know, I would read, but so I could understand the mission better, the philosophy better, so I could be a better devotee, or not a better devotee, a better servant for Srila Prabhupada. And so I think those, so here he is, one of the biggest preachers in the whole movement. He recently organized another huge Pandal program right at the same place across Maidan in Bombay. And he's even thinking, like, we have to do something here, you know, in, what was it, Griffith Park? Or someplace, anyway.
Yeah.
It's an idea. It's an idea. But that's how it all starts. So, Shamsundar Prabhu ki jai.
Said those things.